What's going on, Reds fans, and what's going on, baseball fans alike, and also Braves fans, too, if you're tuning in today. I'm your host, Jeff Carr of the Locked On Reds podcast. Today, we've got a crossover. We're going to call it a crossover plus one. Normally, I like to do these before the series starts, but today, we're doing it after game one. My friend and yours, Dylan Short, the host of the Locked On Braves podcast, is joining me today. We will be talking about this Reds series. We're going to quickly talk about what happened in game one and look forward to games two and three. And we've got some thoughts on what different teams have been doing and relief pitching and all that good stuff. That's coming up here in just a moment on the Locked On Reds podcast. Before we get into all of that, though, you know, we got to hit that intro.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
You are Locked On Reds, your daily Cincinnati Reds podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is a good day today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Jeff Carr. If you are just finding the podcast, make sure you subscribe right here on the YouTube channel or follow me on your favorite podcasting app. You can also follow me on Twitter for flying takes and all kind of good stuff. I like to tweet about food and Star Wars as well as the Reds. You can follow me at Jeff Carr with three F's, and you can follow the show at Locked On Reds. I forgot to shout out yesterday. It was the anniversary of two huge things. I tweeted that out yesterday at Locked On Reds. It was the anniversary of the longest home run in Great American Ballpark history as Adam Dunn hit one 535 feet, which went over the batter's eye. This was in 2004. This was before the riverboat existed. It probably would have cleared that. And legend has it hit Marion Way on a bounce and went into the Ohio River and probably ended up somewhere down near Mississippi. So we're talking about hundreds of miles for this home run. And then also it was the anniversary 11 years ago yesterday of the brawl with the Cardinals. And when Yadier Molina cemented his legacy as one of the most hated men in the city of Cincinnati. Yeah, that was yesterday. I totally missed a bunch of that. There was a lot of great minor league stuff. We're going to talk about that on tomorrow's podcast, though, because today we're talking Reds Braves, and I have with me the man in charge of the Locked On Braves podcast. He is Dylan Short, and he knows all things Braves. Dylan, how you doing, man?
I am fantastic. Welcome to the show to all the Locked On Braves listeners who are tuning in. Kind of a fun little setup as Braves and Cardinals tend to there still tends to be some animus between Braves and Reds fans from the long battles they had early on back in the day. But I think that we can both agree that right now we're probably better friends than we've ever been. And I don't know if it's because there haven't been a ton of, you know, real battles back and forth with the other ones kicking each other out of the playoffs. But I think the hatred of the Cardinals has grown so hot for the Braves that nobody else in the Central like really even registers. It's just hate the Cardinals.
The enemy of the enemy, as my friend. I lived in Braves country whenever the not infield fly happened.
Oh, man, don't remind Braves fans. We are still anytime there's an infield fly call, somebody will bring that up and will come strapped with a picture. That was, I think that might have been one of the worst moments other than like when Kent Herbeck, who is forever going to be one of the most hated players of all time in Braves country, pulled Ron Gant off a bag and cost the Braves a World Series.
Yeah. I remember I was living in Huntsville, Alabama, whenever that happened, and all of us around the TV either liked the Braves or hated the Cardinals. We all hated that moment. That was terrible. Well, we've got baseball today to talk about because we're going to start off with the first game of this series, because if you are a fan of the Braves or if you are a fan of baseball in general, that was high drama. There was lots going on, lots of great at-bats, lots of great pitchers' duels, really. But for the most part, if you're a Reds fan, you hated everything about that game because the Reds just literally walked a win over to the Braves' dugout. Dylan, your thoughts?
So I didn't really know what to think at the time. I was a little shocked that the Braves struggled against Sonny Gray as much as they did. I mean, Sonny's a really good pitcher. I'm a big fan of Sonny Gray. I've never been on the train that Sonny's like a number one, but I think he's a very excellent pitcher. And they brought it up on the broadcast for the Braves side last night. He's kind of similar to Tim Hudson. And when that happens, the Braves generally deal well with kind of average to below average velocity. It's when you have guys that can throw these 94 mile an hour sliders that the offense looks bad. I was pretty impressed all around. I thought they'd do better against Sonny, but I'm happy for a win right now, especially with the Phillies having to play the Dodgers.
Yeah, that has been crazy too. I wanted to talk to you about that with the way that the NL East has kind of changed so much over the last week. Now it's completely wide open. And I even remember during the trade deadline show, we were kind of talking about the different moves that the Braves had made. And it was confusing for the fact that we didn't realize how close the Braves were to first place. I mean, that in hindsight, that looks super smart now.
Well, so at the risk of making a lot of Braves fans very unhappy with me, I wasn't all that enthused at the deadline. Richard Rodriguez, obviously, that was the key piece for me. That was an outstanding trade. As far as the position players go, I was actually kind of underwhelmed. I thought it was a really good opportunity for the Braves to go really in big. Like, I'm still angry that Trey Turner is a Dodger and not a Brave. But everybody's worked out. All of the additions from Jock Peterson, who was before the All-Star break, or before the deadline, all the way to Soler, who's been just crushing baseballs like he tends to do. Everything's worked out well so far, and the Braves are about to start getting healthy again. Waskar Anoa is going to be back really quickly. Travis d'Arnaud is going to be back probably tonight. And then Ian Anderson will probably be back next week or the week after. So for the Braves, man, this is the right time. The NL East is super competitive, just like we thought before the season, just not in the exact way that we thought it would be before the season started. We didn't realize that it was going to be one of the worst divisions in baseball. but for a Braves fan, this is really working out for that as well as you could ask. The Braves played as bad as it was possible for that roster to play for half a season, and yet they're a game out of first.
They definitely got a shot, and last night was a huge boon. Seeing the way that the Reds bullpen pitched was Groundhog Day. In fact, that was so many different games throughout this season have looked that way, where as soon as they go to the bullpen, things devolve, and not in the way that other teams are making lots of hard contact. There's not been a ton of home runs. It's just they don't throw strikes. And you had Heath Hembree come in. Heath Hembree, who I said right here on the Locked On Reds podcast, was the Reds' best reliever in the first half of the season. I stand by that. I also say this now. Whenever TJ Antone is healthy and ready to come back to the major leagues, I think it's time for Heath Hembree to go because he's done. I think he comes into games and he pitches not to lose. Speaking of pitching not to lose, the guy who came in after him, Amir Garrett, pitches a third of an inning, pitches as few batters as he possibly can, and he walks two of them, and they were both left-handed. Even in the days of the loogie, that is not an employable result. I mean, you're not going to have a lefty that can't get lefties out. So I don't understand why David Bell is just so I think he is locked into some kind of redemption story for some of these dudes in the bullpen, that he just really, really forces the issues and things like this, because Luis Sessa was okay. Michael Givens was okay. Michael Lorenzen was okay. They didn't pitch the day before, so they could have pitched yesterday and they didn't. I was baffled by that. I thought it was weird that they pulled them in a tie game, because I mean, I thought the game was within reach for either team at that point, and that inning just absolutely shot holes in any sails that the Reds might have had in their ship.
I mean, bullpens and managing bullpens, that seems to be like the real bugaboo across baseball. We can talk about this up and down the list with just about every team. Some guys just know how to manage bullpens, and some guys don't like to steer away from the way that they think it should be done. You see that a lot now. It tends to be whenever you have somebody who's been around baseball for a long time, or somebody who's kind of, as we call, a traditionalist, you get this thing where these managers will want to run the same guys out there and give you the tried and true, well, we just got to power them through it. And that's certainly true, but there is such a thing as you know, specific leverage situations for a reason. And for the Braves, we're just happy that it's not our bullpen that's blowing stuff right now. we were dealing with that for literally all but like the last two, about the last, really about the last month, if I'm being kind to the bullpen. They've been good for about a month now, but it's been a trial, and we were seeing it a lot where if you don't have consistency, and really, I think it really ultimately comes down to you need different types of makeup in the bullpen. Obviously, you need your guys that are just high stuff that can just go in there and lock it down. The problem is those guys tend to not have very consistent command, which is why they're relievers in the first place. But you do need to kind of cut that, so to speak, with some guys that know how to locate. That way you have some guy who's not going to – you have at least one or two. You should always have two. You should always have at least two guys who you can bring into a game, and even if they're going to give up contact, they're not going to walk people all over the yard. But you can feel confident they'll throw strikes. Right now, I don't think the Reds really have that. Hembry used to be that guy, but I don't think he is anymore. Antone is really, really talented. I think that he's whatever. I think he's kind of like Grisel, where they wanted him as a starter for a long time, but I think he's just going to fit better in the bullpen. Braves have had a little bit of that too. We're going to see that once Anoa comes up, and then once Ian Anderson comes back, either Tuki Toussaint or Kyle Muller will move to the bullpen. And I think if Tuki moves to the bullpen, that's where he'll stay. That was the plan before the season. Obviously, injuries kind of ruined that. But as far as the Reds go, man, I'll give some credit where it's due. I really, half the time I look at them, I don't expect them to be playing as well as they are. Now, I don't know, and I wanted to ask you, is that more of a function of the Central as a whole, or is it just the Reds have quietly been an above-average team?
It's definitely been I think it's a little bit of both. It's definitely been augmented by the Pittsburgh Pirates. They just are a terrible team, and the Reds have dominated them as such this season, which is good because in years past, they've acquiesced to the level that the Pirates are.
You've got to beat the teams you're supposed to beat.
Yeah, and that's been an issue for them in years past. So they've taken advantage of that, and I think the thing that they've got is, for the most part, at least 3 to 4 out of every 5 days, they've got good starting pitching. It's just, can the bullpen hold it? And they've, more times than I mean, yesterday, the lineup really got shut down. Drew Smyly was getting a lot of weak contact from them, and I know that Aquino had that home run, but that was it.
Thank the Lord, Smyly was leaving balls in the middle of the plate all day. There's nothing more terrifying for Braves fans than seeing Drew Smyly go through the order a third time.
I was surprised that they had left him in, to be honest with you. But hey, to his credit, he pitched pretty well there. And the Reds lineup just was not taking advantage. But for the most part, it just comes down to what the bullpen's going to do. And on days where David Bell insists on pitching the B squad out of the bullpen, that's when we really just, you know, chew our nails off and make sure we've got a strong streak nearby.
I can certainly commiserate with you there. We get that quite a bit here in Braves country still. We kind of feel that way, or at least I do, every time Will Smith comes in the ninth inning. Because he just doesn't throw clean innings, man, and it goes back to bullpens. I don't know if there's another position group in baseball that can cause you as many ulcers as the bullpen.
Right. No, and I tell you, it's been an issue all year. It's an issue that the front office and ownership created this past offseason, but I won't get into all that because I've said that a whole bunch, and I think people are tired of it. But I will tell you, we're going to preview today's pitching matchup coming up here in just a minute. Before we talk about that, though, I wanted to let you know that there's this great app that we're all using to talk about sports nowadays. It's the Spotify Green Room app. It was actually the Locker Room app. So if you download the Locker Room app and then all of a sudden you've got this weird logo on your phone that's not Locker Room, something completely different, Spotify bought it and turned it in to Spotify Green Room. You can join me. You can join Dylan. You can join other media types. They've got players on there sometimes and lots of fans talking about all of the biggest news and games, reactions, all that good stuff in sports. You can follow the MLB group. You can follow Dylan and myself and get notified when we go live. And you can join in on the conversation with us later this week. Download the Spotify app on your iOS device or on your Android device as well, and join us as we talk about the Reds and the Braves and Major League Baseball and everything that's going on, because Spotify Green Room is changing the way that we talk sports. Download that app today and join Dylan and myself as we have rooms. We talk about our teams. That's the Spotify Green Room app. All right. So tonight we've got a wily vet against a young buck. We got Wiley Miley, Wade Miley against Tuki Toussaint. I know for my fact, I'm not sure as to the tempo that Tuki Toussaint likes to pitch to, but if he is any, if he's even close to average and both these guys go deep into the game, it's going to be a quick game because Wade Miley doesn't like to mess around, man. Like, he gets the ball and throws it very quickly, come hell or high water. It's going to be interesting to see, but Dylan, what can Reds fans expect from the man they call Tuki?
So Tuki is another one. He works very, very quickly. A lot of the Braves pitchers do, especially the young guys. Like when you guys see Kyle Muller, you'll see, because Kyle Muller literally just gets it and throws. But Tuki's pretty similar in that respect. And Reds fans, if Tuki's on today, you're going to be very, very well reminded of a former Reds player. And I have said this for years. Tuki Toussaint, to me, is just like Raisel Iglesias. He's got a decent fastball. He's got some good velo on it, can run it up to 97. He'll normally sit around 94, 90, anywhere from 93 to 95, but he'll just sit right around 94. Occasionally he'll bring it, but it's the off speed. It's the secondary pitch that's the big key for him. The curveball for Tuki is his best pitch, easily. It's a bit of a looper. It's a big looper, but it's one of those that's almost has the sharp downward break of like a knuckle curve, but he throws it more like a 12-6. But he makes big league hitters look stupid with it. And then if he's got a split finger on, it's going to be a long day for that Reds lineup, particularly those lefties. But like Iglesias, back when the Reds were starting him, it's that command of the third pitch and the fastball command that can get away from him at times. And as far as tonight, what you'll see from Tuki is you're going to see a lot of secondary pitches. You'll know within the first inning kind of how it's going to be. Now, if he's got the splitter command and the curveball command, he doesn't really have to have the fastball in order to mitigate some damage, but he'll have some longer innings. If he's got the fastball command, he's absolutely electric.
It's going to be interesting to see. I know I've streamed him a couple of times in fantasy and been pretty happy with it. I didn't stream him against the Brewers, so I didn't worry about that. But I'm looking forward to watching him pitch. And talking about Raisel Iglesias, it's going to be fun to watch, because I remember when Raisel Iglesias first came up as a starter, he did have some really good outings. So this could be a long day for the Reds lineup.
It's almost the exact same story, by the way. Like, it is literally, if you look at the two players, it's almost the exact same breakdown. They just have such premium stuff that you want to start them, and you don't want to pigeonhole them as one-inning guys. It's just the command. And it's the mechanics and it's the command. With Raisel, he's got that big sweeping arm action that comes across his body. With Tuki, his fastball, it just tends to run arm side so much that it can be unplayable if he's not able to spot it. So it's a nice little barometer, because for Tuki, this is a big start for him, because him and Muller are going to have to battle now to see which one of them are going to be in the rotation, which one of them is going to go to the bullpen, and who goes to AAA. I know a lot of Braves fans are in this weird mindset that because Waskar Anoa only throws two pitches, that, oh, he can't be a starter. Never mind the fact that Blake Snell didn't start getting good again until he only started throwing two pitches, or that Jacob deGrom, who I don't know if you've heard of him, might be the best pitcher we've ever seen, throws two pitches for literally like 90% of his time. But with Anoa, he's going to come back as a starter. He was the Braves' best starter. He punched a bench and broke his hand. He's coming back as a starter. Ian Anderson's obviously not coming back into the bullpen. He might need one, maybe two more rehab starts, and he'll be back up. So at that point for Tuki, he's going to be kind of in the same role that he's been in all year. He's going to have to battle it out. And this Reds lineup, they can do damage. And if your command is not on there, pretty much up and down y'all's lineup, you've got home run pop.
I'm hoping that they'll at least bring a little bit more offense today. I was glad to see them actually score runs. It was the first time in 2 years that they scored runs down in Atlanta. So that was nice to see. But From the Red side, Braves can expect Wade Miley just to be super consistent with his pitches. He's been very good at limiting hard contact this year. Now, he has, in some games, gotten into trouble by giving up solo shots and things like that. So that can happen. And he also, he doesn't walk a ton of people, but he's also not going to strike out a ton of people. He is trying to make the hitter hit his best pitch, not necessarily worrying about making him getting himself out, but he is going to throw lots of breaking balls low in the zone. And the fastball is going to be kind of high and inside. He's going to try and get that in for a strike and then set the tone for the rest of the at bat. He is, and like I mentioned, he works very fast. So I'm hoping, especially if he gets into a groove. I mean, I still remember very vividly when they were in San Francisco, he was in a groove, and to the point where the ball boy, because he had thrown a strike and nobody was on base, but Tucker didn't catch it, so it went back to the backstop. So the ball boy's running out to grab it, and he is still in the camera shot as Wade Miley's going into his motion. I mean, he is so quick whenever he's in the zone. This might be a very interesting watch if you're a fan of pitching. I'd be interested to see what the over-under is. I haven't looked at it yet, but I'm looking forward. I knew that coming into this series, it was going to be very tightly contested because these two teams are close to the playoff race, and I think that tonight is going to be no exception, especially with you saying that Tukey likes to work fast.
Yeah, I think that The good news for the Braves here in facing Miley is that the Cardinals were nice enough to throw you three of the exact same pitcher. And all three of them are very similar to Wade Miley, where they don't have premium velocity. They kind of rely on secondaries and pitching around the zone and not necessarily in the zone. I think a lot of it's going to come down to who's behind the plate as far as the umpiring crew goes. Because if Miley gets that call off the plate consistently, that changes the game for any hitter, but especially for a lot of these Braves hitters. Luckily for the Braves. Now, stringing together hits has not been fun for the Braves all season. Since the deadline, since they've kind of rearranged the lineup, it's been a lot better. You were able to see last night the Braves were kind of struggling offensively for a little bit until they were able to come through there and put enough traffic on base to make something actually stick. And that's kind of been the name of the game. They've got home run power. But when the Braves were really, really good the last couple of years, it came in a variety of ways. This whole year, the Braves have been able to mash home runs. They're like fifth or seventh in OPS in Major League Baseball. And they were second in home runs for the longest time, just behind the Dodgers. And they don't really count. That's like the Harlem Globetrotters. They don't really count. But that's kind of the story, is if you're going to be a team that can do damage in the playoffs, it can't just be reliant on the home run. You got to be able to do other things. You got to be able to drive actual hits and get traffic on the bases without it being a homer. So I'm excited to see. I think this is a good opportunity for the Braves. Like I said, the Phillies are stuck playing that Dodgers team. So for the Braves, they've been on the first real run they've had of the season. I think they're six of their last seven or five of their last six, something like that. It's been a nice change for Braves fans, I'll tell you that. For us not being able to win back-to-back games for the longest stretch in Major League Baseball history, this has been a nice stretch for us.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see how game two goes. I want to talk a little bit about game three and just some overall series thoughts here in just a moment with you here, Dylan. But before we get into that, let's talk about some Built Bar. We're talking about the best tasting protein bar on the market, bar none.
In the universe,
because it's made with 100% real chocolate. Who else can say that? I mean, you've got like cardboard bars out there. We won't name names, but most of them don't taste like anything at all. Built Bar's got a lot of great flavors that are all made with 100% real chocolate. You got my favorite, Cherry Barcia. Dylan, what's your favorite?
Salted caramel, man. That one. Ooh. And I don't know if they're still doing this, but I haven't gotten it in a while. The birthday cake flavor. I'm a child, so like childish flavors are my favorite. But that birthday cake one was absolutely insane. And
no,
when you're talking about those Built Bars, you know what else makes them better than all of those other gas station or quote unquote healthy options there? It's the texture. You don't feel like you're eating beef jerky that tastes like cardboard. You've got something that actually tastes like a candy bar, and it's got that feel to it too. So you don't feel like your mouth is going to break trying to chew it up.
Without a doubt. And I'm a huge stat guy, too, and the stats don't lie. We're talking about 4 grams of carbs, 4 grams of sugar, and up to 18 grams of protein. I mean, when you combine the 100% real chocolate, the flavors that you get from Built Bar, and those statistics, I don't know what you're waiting for. Go to BuiltBar.com. use the promo code LOCKED15 and save 15% off your next order. You can find your favorite flavor. You can get a mixed box. They get you two of each flavor that they've got going on. You can check out the limited flavors that they roll in and out every so often. They've got amazing stuff to check out. Go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 to save 15% off your next order. Plus, Dylan, I was looking at this. I went over to betonline.ag. And I wonder what you're thinking about this, because the over-under tonight is set at 10. Now, I will say, kind of like we talked about, Wade Miley, Tuki Toussaint, they work fast. But like you mentioned, Tuki's got command stuff. And then whenever Wade Miley's not on, he's walking guys and he's throwing some meatballs in the middle of the zone. How are we feeling about 10? Are we leaving this? Are we taking this? What are you thinking?
This is such a hard one to look at, and props to BetOnline for throwing a really interesting line out there, as they usually do. When you're talking about guys that you're going to have somebody take the over on that and feel really good when there's like 11 total runs scored, or you're going to have somebody bet big on that and there's going to be absolutely like 3 runs total scored in the game. And you want to stump the Schwab, you want to beat the Sharps, well, you got to put your money where your mouth is. Thanks to betonline.ag, the normal average fan can do so as well. If you're not into game lines in particular, I'm sure you can find some lines on whether or not a certain player will be able to perform today. I don't know if you want to throw, if you're a Reds fan, Nick Castellanos right there, probably somebody you'd like to take an over on. For Braves fans, Freddie Freeman, probably somebody you'd like to take a little over under on.
Freddie kind of had a rough night last night, so I'm expecting him to get his revenge tonight. That's going to be it's going to be an interesting bet, I would say. I think he's probably going to go yard once in this game for sure. I'll be interested to see how the Reds limit the damage. I think I'm taking the under on this 10. I hate betting the under, but I feel like good nights are coming for both these pitchers, and the Reds A squad in the bullpen is ready to go. They didn't pitch that much last night, so I'm thinking that I'm going under 10, which right now is setting -118. That's my tip for betonline.ag today. Go there, set up your profile. And what's that promo code, Dylan?
That is going to be Locked On, my friend.
Locked On. You'll get 50% added onto your initial deposit. Plus, take this tip, under 10, -118 on the Braves and Reds tonight. All right. I'm feeling pretty good about it. I will say I hit really well on a weekend tip last weekend when the Reds faced the Pirates, but I missed on the tip that I had for the Reds and Indians. So hopefully we've got a winner here today. I think both guys are going to be on their game tonight. I think both Miley and Tuki are going to pitch well.
I think Tukey's due for another really good start. His last start was a step in the right direction. Wasn't great, but he was able to overcome. And actually, a lot of us in Braves country were pretty excited that Tuki was able to manage a game without having premium stuff and premium location. So for him, this is a good opportunity. We've seen Tuki have great starts before in previous seasons, and then we've just seen him not be able to carry that over. And that's kind of the realm he's been into now. Since he's been up, he's had 2 outstanding starts. He's had 2 good, not great starts. He's also had 2 very bad starts. So for Tuki, it's the name of the game is consistency, and there's not a better opportunity than when your back's up against the wall. A lot of these young guys for the Braves do very well when their back's up against the wall. Now, there's a lot of them that don't. Names like Kyle Wright, names like Bryce Wilson, who's now with the Pirates. But there's a lot of these young guys that really flourish when they have that opportunity. They know that it's their final one. I don't know how it's been for a lot of the Reds prospects, but you guys are throwing a prospect of your own tomorrow, right? Vladimir Gutierrez?
Yeah, he, in his rookie year, Goody has been pretty Gucci. I mean, he's, you will know right away how good or bad he's going to be, because he gives up lots of hard contact early if he's not going to be good. But he's had some games where he's gone 6-7 innings, allowing 1 earned run, maybe 2 earned runs, something like that.
He's the one that's related to Guerrero, right?
Nah, yeah. Nah, he's the cousin, yeah. He's had a great season with his curveball. He can throw it for strikes, and I love what he can do with he doesn't try to nibble. I think that's one thing that's gotten, and Sonny Gray didn't so much do it yesterday, but in past starts has had a problem with that. Tyler Malley has been a guy that once he gets to 2 strikes, he really tries to pitch around the hitter and get that 3rd strike, and it gives him lots of balls and really raises runs his pitch up that pitch a lot. Count. Yeah,
that's a Gutierrez that's a big not problem. That's a big problem for young guys. Kyle Muller, who you guys will see, that's kind of the same thing as Kyle. He has no problems getting to two strikes, and he works faster than maybe any other pitcher in baseball. When he gets to 0-2, though, he does have a tendency to nibble. And for a lot of these young guys, that's kind of the last big hurdle. Once you can feel pretty confident about your ability to get to two strikes, everybody's chasing that perfect pitch. And I feel like nowadays in baseball, when a hitter gets 0-2, you're automatically expecting at least two pitches that aren't going to be in the zone. So it kind of gets to that mode where obviously you want to go the strikeouts, because the only way to make sure that you don't have any damage done against you is for the pitcher to strike the guy out or to not allow contact. So it'll be interesting to see. I'm excited. I haven't seen Gutierrez, so I'm excited to see him. I remember some big blurbs on him for a few years, and he kind of fell off a little bit as far as where to place him in the prospects for the Reds. But I've always liked his stuff. And you can't argue with bloodlines. You really can't argue with bloodlines.
Right. And he went through that hiatus because of performance enhancers and that suspension and things like that. But coming back, he really had his good stuff. And we're talking about tomorrow's game here with Gutierrez and Muller. And it's interesting that the start time, 5:10, like this is an Eastern time game. We're not in Central time. I don't know what's going on here.
But yeah, I'm not fond of that.
Yeah, this is going to be weird. Like, people are going to be on their drive home listening to the beginning of the game. This is very strange for me, but when I look at Goody, he's been a lot of fun to watch. And I always say, like, when he's got his really good stuff, I think it's just hitters are just so overly focused on the spider tattoo on his neck, and they're just like freaking out. They're like, I don't know what to do at this point.
It's like Matt Scherzer staring at you with them different colored eyes, knowing that brown one's going to turn blue once he takes your soul.
They're checking for substances, but those aren't things that they can control. The spider tattoo, the different colored eyes, like, those are just individual performance enhancers that they're going to roll with. I love watching Goody pitch, and I'm interested because I think the Reds have faced Kyle Muller a couple of times, and Muller's kind of shut them down.
Muller is one of these that's really fun to watch. And I don't know how long this is going to keep lasting for him, but he's one of these rare guys that has actually been way better in the majors than he's been really at any stop in his minor league career, especially at the beginning of it. Muller generally struggles his first time at a new level. He hasn't had that issue with Atlanta. Now, to be fair, it's the first three starts he had were against outstanding pitchers. Right. His first start was against DeGrom. Didn't win that one, but he only allowed two runs. Really, really pitched well against DeGrom. And really, the Braves should have won that, and they kind of blew that for him. Then I believe he was the one who took on Darvish in the Padres series. And then, I might be wrong on that one. That one might have been Tukey. But he's had a lot of the big-name pitchers that he's gone up against. This last outing he had was like the first one where he didn't face like an opposing ace. And sometimes that can help, and sometimes that can actually hurt young guys. When you're coming up and you're facing one of these studs, then you kind of know that you have to be on your game. It kind of gives you that adrenaline run throughout the whole start. When you're facing these guys who are kind of the average guys or the fourth or fifth in your rotation, then it becomes more about you, and you actually end up being a little bit tighter. So I'm looking to see what Muller can do. I know he can strike out a lot of guys. You know, he's got really good stuff. His secondaries are really nice. It's command of them that's kind of key for him. But that slider for him has been a big game changer at the big league level. He's got a good hook. He's got a good fastball. He'll throw a changeup every once in a while. But really, that slider has been kind of the key pitch for him, busting that slider on the back foot of righties. And I think that's the big key for Muller. If he can consistently back foot that slider, then he's going to have a good outing. Luckily, a lot of the Reds' big boppers tend to be lefty. I'm never excited when Castellanos comes to the plate because the dude just breaks. But overall, if Muller can kind of command a little bit better and not play around when he gets two strikes, he's got a chance to go deep. The only thing that's held him back has been pitch count. And you mentioned Tyler Mahle. That's a very good player for Braves fans to look at in terms of what Kyle Muller's been, and for Reds fans to kind of look at Tyler Mahle's type of outings, and you can kind of expect what you're going to get from Kyle Muller. They're very, very similar pitchers.
He shut the Reds down back on June 27th. I had to look that one up, but I was like, good Lord, three base runners, nine strikeouts in five innings. That was an impressive
innings
start.
Was the problem, because he was doing a lot of that where he'd get to 0-2 and then he'd run a count 3-2. And it's just that's the final piece for young guys, really, is figuring out how to manage pitch count. And when they're first coming up, it's like, hey, just give me good outings. If it only goes five innings, it only goes five innings. But once you start trying to make your stamp on a rotation and actually like earn a higher slot on there, then it becomes about you need to get me six or seven each time out. So I'm excited to see it.
It's going to be interesting to watch. And one thing I wanted to ask you too before we wrapped up, I know that the Braves really had to deal with the injury of Ronald Acuna, but I thought they did an admirable job of going out and getting some outfielders. Has any one of those guys been the dude who's really stepped up and at least tried to replace production, or has it been somebody else? Who has been the key linchpin replacement for Acuna? Because I know they're in the middle of the order with Freeman and Acuna and Albies. That was always really cool.
Well, so when Acuna went down, 99.9% of Braves country were, okay, the season's done. And there's you know, I can't fault anybody for thinking that. You don't replace Ronald Acuna. He's one of the top five most talented players in baseball. I said myself that he's Ken Griffey Jr. That's what he is. He's that guy that can do every single thing on the field and do it better than everybody else. He's just that type of dude. But I did not ever hold to the idea that that just meant the Braves were done for this year. A lot of people, you tend to forget, because you're looking at how great Ronald is, you forget about a lot of the other guys on the team. Now, Freddie, coming off an MVP season a year ago, Freddie's always been the linchpin. As soon as Acuna went down, and Freddie just started tearing it up again. He's actually hitting as well over the last 2.5 months or so than what he was doing his MVP season. He's been incredible this year. That's why I wasn't all that worried. He wasn't hitting early. Neither was Ozzie Albies, who, in my opinion, is not just the best second baseman in baseball, one of the most underrated players in baseball, period, for the things that he can give you. But as far as the new additions, you have to look at, they've all played very well. Duvall has already been amazing in left field. He's already hosed two runners. He's, you know, he just comes up clutch with home runs whenever it seems like the tide is starting to turn, when the Braves look like they're kind of gaining a little bit of momentum. And if Duvall's at the plate, he's going yard, and he's going to turn the momentum for the Braves. He's been doing that his whole Braves career, basically. But Jorge Soler is the one that I'm going to keep looking at. He hasn't looked that bad in the field. There were a couple ones last night where he kind of let the ball play him rather than run to the spot. I can't remember who it was, but there was one early on in the game on a well-hit fly ball. I want to say,
was it Shogo?
Maybe it was Shogo. It was a leadoff double. It might have been, no, it was Joey Votto. It was Votto. Where Votto hit one pretty good. He touched it pretty good, but it was a play that Ronald or a more seasoned outfielder would have made. But for Soler, it's been the offense, and that's why you got him. You didn't give up anything for him. You gave up Casey Kalish. But Soler's a guy that when he makes contact with the ball, he just crushes them. And he's making great contact. He's hitting over 300 in this time with the Braves. Now, that's probably not going to last, but he's been such a boon to be able to put him second in the order and have Freddie hitting behind him and have Austin hitting behind Freddie. You just kind of guarantee that people in the top portion of your lineup are all seeing fastballs, and all of them are very good fastball hitters. Jock's been really good since coming over. I got to give him some props. I wasn't a big fan of that move. I thought Jock was kind of done, but he's been very, very good. Really, all of the additions the Braves have made that actually play key time other than Kevin Smith, I've been really good.
It's good to see. And there's these final two games are going to be amazing to watch between the Reds and the Braves. Game two tonight at 7:10. And like we mentioned, game three, 5:10 tomorrow.
It's a horrible start time.
Weird early evening game. I don't know what to make of that, but we'll be all over it. You can follow me if you're a Reds fan, you don't follow me, or if you're a Braves fan, you can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Carr with 3 F's, and you can follow the show at Locked On Reds. Dylan, where can they find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Dylan X Short, or you can follow the Locked On Braves account. Make sure you type in at Locked On _ Braves, as somebody else got the first iteration of the handle and I've never been able to get it back. So Reds fans, I don't mind if y'all follow me. I don't have any animus towards the Reds. I'm 30, so I don't really have that big hatred of the big red machine or anything like that. So, and like I said before, the Cardinals are my hatred team. The rest of the Central, I don't hate anybody in there. So, Reds fans, if you ever just want to talk about how awful the Cardinals are and how much you hate them, feel free to shoot out a line, and I will always be here for some Cardinals slander.
And you can also follow the Locked On Braves podcast wherever you get your podcast. And you can follow Locked On Reds the same place, all the, wherever you get your podcast. It's great. It's nice to be on everywhere. And make sure you're subscribed right here to the YouTube channel. But as for Dylan and myself, thank you so much for watching and listening. Dylan, say goodnight, sir.
Everybody have fun. It's going to be a good little matchup tonight. Look at Braves fans. Obviously, we're looking for Tukey to dominate, but looking for some good time. Looking for the Braves to be able to take over first place from those nasty, no good, dirty, rotten Phillies. And for the Reds, you know, good luck to y'all tonight. Hoping that we blow you out, but you know, let's have a good game.
Speaking of the Phillies, the Reds got them this weekend too. It's going to be,
hey, do me a favor,
wreck them. Yeah, we hoping so, man. Hey, thanks again.